Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And this takes acknowledging and confronting head on systemic racism and the racial disparities that exist in policing and in our criminal justice system more broadly. You know, state and local government and law enforcement needs to step up, but so does the federal government.
A president who is bluntly speaking about the reality of systemic racism, that would have been very hard to imagine before George Floyd's murder and the movement that's followed. Biden has said racial justice would be a defining element of his presidency. He was motivated to run in 2020 by the white supremacy openly flaunted at the 2017 Charlottesville rally, he said. And yet his administration's criminal justice plan calls for an additional $300 million for police departments to hire and train officers on community policing. For those in his party looking to defund or reallocate public safety, that is not entirely promising. One of the key people who's going to be guiding the administration here is Vinita Gupta. She was confirmed in April as Associate Attorney General, the number three position at the Department of Justice, where she oversees the Civil Rights Division. I spoke with Gupta last week. It has been an extraordinary year for protest, for the criminal justice system. We've seen upheaval unlike any maybe since the 1960s. What is the Biden administration determined to do to make clear that it's fighting for racial equality and that this is a priority for the administration?
Well, it has been an extraordinary year, and in a lot of ways, the protests were not just about policing and criminal justice, but actually, I think, touched every part of American life. And in a lot of ways, the administration's response has mirrored that. The equity agenda of the administration, I think, has been a demonstration that every part of the government has a role to play, that it is not just the purview of the Civil Rights Division at the U.S. Department of Justice to ensure racial equity, but that the Department of Transportation needs to have a racial equity impact, that the Housing and Urban Development Agency needs to have a racial equity impact, that this is that everyone in government actually has a role to play to ensure that we're fighting entrenched disparities.
Let's talk about policing. You led the federal investigation into the Ferguson Police Department when you came to the Department of Justice during the Obama administration. We've heard a lot about defund the police, reforming police, and we've seen very, very different ways of going about that. What approach does the Department of Justice want to see enacted in cities throughout the country? What do you want to see happen in police departments in Minneapolis, in New York, in San Francisco, in Los Angeles, and all across the nation?
So just to start, I think it's important that the Attorney General named civil rights as his top priority along with the fight against domestic terrorism. And I think what's really interesting about some of the conversation we're seeing in policing today is that there's been a push to recognize that policing alone cannot keep communities safe, that it has been a mistake to rely simply on criminal justice models and not be thinking about community-based mental health, community-based substance use programs and services so that people can, especially in low-income Black and brown communities, have access to other interventions besides the criminal justice system. And the tools that the Justice Department has are actually broader than what sometimes people understand. So the pattern of practice investigation tool is often the tool that gets the highest profile and the most media coverage. That's the tool that the Civil Rights Division has. But the Justice Department actually touches a much broader scale of police departments through the grant making, through the Office of Justice Programs, through the COPS Office, through the Office of Violence Against Women, where we can both innovate, pilot important programs where we can emulate and propagate the some of the best practices in consent decrees and help support police reform, help support law enforcement. So I think the Justice Department needs to do this work at higher scale. I will also say, David, look, the last year, I know people, there are a lot of people in a lot of parts of the country who feel like, well, nothing has changed. We continue to see tragedy after tragedy. But I think it would be a mistake.
We do see that.
We do. And I think it's the tragedies are, one is there's a higher level of awareness. We are seeing more of it because there's more on video than ever before. But I also think it's really significant, while recognizing how much work we have to do, that 30 states and a lot of local governments around the country enacted a series of reforms this past year that I don't think would have happened but for a real demand for it by communities. You have states that are banning or limiting the use of neck restraints. You've got states that are increasing funding for body cameras that are now requiring de-escalation. I mean, 5 and 6 years ago, there really wasn't very much awareness, even in law enforcement, or a real kind of mainstream push around the duty to intervene when people see fellow officers using excessive force.
Sure. But this on the level of awareness. But in terms of policy, President Biden's criminal justice plan calls for an additional $300 million for police departments to hire more officers, to train them on community policing efforts. And for decades, we put more and more money into these police departments, years of retraining. And yet these hideous police killings keep happening. Can you spend your way out of a problem like that that seems really systemic in the end?
Well, I don't, you know, the administration has been, or I should say, let me speak about the Justice Department. When we look at the work that we have been doing the last few years, there has been a need, of course, to provide resources for law enforcement. I remember going into the team and going into the Baltimore Police Department and finding a room of file cabinets with paper forms on stops that had never been analyzed, digested. They had no data systems even to self-study. And we literally had to create data systems to understand the patterns of stops and searches. That actually cost upfront money to build that infrastructure. The money that there's officer wellness and safety programs that we know have determined better results on reductions of use of force. But there's a big, big push through our consent decrees and through our grant making to actually also support programs that would reduce criminal justice interaction and do exactly what people are calling for, which is to increase community-based solutions. So this has got to be part and parcel.
Merrick Garland has talked openly about the deleterious effects of criminalizing low-level drug offenses. Is the administration going to denounce the war on drugs as a failure?
Well, I have spoken a lot about the problems of enforcement priorities, as has the Attorney General. And, you know, there has been a lot of focus on priorities and on recognizing that enforcement of low-level drug crimes at the expense of focusing on violent crime, that actually takes away the focus of law enforcement, and that police community trust is actually essential to the ability to fight crime. And I think the lesson in some ways that we are learning and seeing for the last year is that law enforcement alone isn't going to be able to reduce violent crime, that communities, that social service providers, that local governments all have a key role. And at the Justice Department, there's an important role of enforcing the law. That's through criminal accountability and through the pattern and practice authority that we have to investigate police departments where laws are violated, and then through grant making and to seeking diversion and alternatives to arrest and incarceration, and to not use arrest and incarceration as the metric, but actually lives saved.
Your confirmation hearing was, I think it's probably accurate to say, tense. Republicans like Ted Cruz called your record one of an extreme partisan ideologue. Did the tone of that confirmation hearing make you concerned that criminal justice reform is no longer a bipartisan matter? Is it a bipartisan matter?
So I don't use my confirmation hearing as much of a litmus test for anything. I think it is what it is.
Why not?
Well, because I actually think that criminal justice reform remains a very strong bipartisan issue. Often policing tends to not be bipartisan, and kind of sentencing reform has gotten a lot more traction, reentry, pretrial reform. But I think that that is changing. You know, of the states that have actually tackled policing reform over the past year, in a lot of places, that was actually a bipartisan effort. But it's going to take a lot of pushing. We still have to ensure that the First Step Act is fully implemented. That was a bipartisan law passed in the last Congress, and the Attorney General is really committed to ensuring its full implementation. And I think that people are already talking about the second step and all of the remaining reforms that need to take place. And so I remain very optimistic about the prospects for criminal justice reform, for bipartisan criminal justice reform around the country and here in Washington.
Let's talk about a second step to the First Step Act. Trump pardoned a very small handful of people in the end. And it's being reported that Biden is planning on using his clemency powers much more broadly, working to designate whole classes of people who could be free potentially. Can you tell me anything about who those people will be?
I can't speak to those specifics right now, but I do know that there is a commitment to ensuring that clemency will help advance the racial equity interests of the administration and that the Justice Department will play a role in that process. But that's probably all I can say about it right now.
But what would that mean if you're going to try to ease racial inequity through clemency? What would that mean?
Well, I can say on what it meant before and what I think it, you know, what that would demonstrate for now, which is okay. When Attorney General Holder and President Obama announced the Clemency Initiative in 2014 to really seek to address unjust sentencing, particularly where Congress had changed laws that had not been made retroactive, you know, crack cocaine sentencing and the Fair Sentencing Act. It wasn't perfect. It did not reach, I think everyone would agree there were too many people left behind. But the effort to ensure clemency for folks who had felt most severely the impact of those laws, I think, is kind of the flavor and of the flavor that we could expect moving forward on clemency.
Associate Attorney General Vinita Gupta, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, David.
Vinita Gupta oversees the Civil Rights Division in the Department of Justice. She was confirmed in April.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.